Hello, radio family. Welcome to Divine Intervention, the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. I am your host, Daniel Fazina. And friends, we've got a wonderful show prepared for you today. We're going to be speaking to a gentleman who will exemplify how perseverance in the face of insurmountable odds with the help of God will help you to succeed in life. My special guest today is best-selling author Jerry Smith, who has an amazing life story of surviving some really traumatic events in his life and becoming the first person in known medical history to be cured of pulmonary fibrosis. Praise God for that. He's got a wonderful story. Now, just a little bit of background about Jerry Smith before we introduce him. Jerry lives with his wife, Jan, in northern Texas, where they both work in real estate, and he holds a degree in accounting and is a certified public accountant. He's the author of the book, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? It's an Amazon bestseller, and it is the story of his life. His website is jerrysmith.org, and it is my pleasure to welcome Jerry Smith right now on Divine Intervention. Jerry, you are on Divine Intervention. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It's my pleasure. I was very excited to meet you at the National Publicity Summit, and it was interesting that you decided to sit behind me and tell me all about your amazing story before you even knew that I was a radio host and what I do is collect miracle testimonies. So that was kind of a divine appointment right there, I think.
I think it was just God using me in a sense that he's filled me with so much passion that I just talk to everybody.
And not, yeah. And I really appreciate that about you. And you have an amazing story. You've had quite an amazing life. A lot of interesting things have happened to you, and I definitely want to get to that. But let's take it to the beginning. Tell us about your background growing up and who you are, because you had a very, I would say, atypical childhood.
Okay. My grandmother died during childbirth, and my mother was born a deaf mute. And so when my grandmother died, I've learned some of this since I wrote the book, because of my book being published last year, some biological relatives actually found me on the internet last year accidentally. They didn't know I was alive or existed, and I didn't know about them. So that's a very interesting story, how they were Googling a relative and came across my book.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in case, my mother had two brothers with her grandmother, her mother, and then after her mother's death, her father remarried and then had two more sons. Well, since as I learned from this family, or my family now, I learned some more of the story, and that was that my grandfather was an alcoholic, and I guess sort of a Bubba type, you might say, that in when his wife died, he immediately wanted to replace her immediately with a new wife as soon as possible, and he wanted to get rid of the three kids he had with her. I don't understand that.
Wow.
So he got some other relatives to take the two boys. But nobody would take my mother because she was born deaf and deaf mute. Mm. And so they all considered her handicapped. So she was abandoned. Well, when she was grown, she had no education. So about all she could do was get a job working as a live-in housekeeper. Well, she was ultimately raped by that homeowner and nobody would take her. When I'm born, nobody would take us. So after she looked.
Wait, so you were the product of that rape?
I was a product of that rape.
Wow.
And her father and stepmom wouldn't take her and me, or either one of us. So after my mother had looked around a little bit, she just took off, I guess, and left me there, abandoned me.
My goodness.
Then, about during the course of the next year, she had gone to the school for the deaf. Somebody had able to arrange her going down there in Baton Rouge, and they did. Back in those days, they didn't seem to do much education. It was more like just a B&B. But anyway, so after she had abandoned me, she had a reunion at that school for deaf, and she met this guy that she remembered from school. He was living in California. His wife had passed away, and they had two children, so they dated and married.
Okay.
And went back to California. Well, then she came back and got me out of the Baptist Children's Home to live with them. In less than 6 months, he was able to force her to get rid of me by filing for divorce because he didn't want me from the beginning. So she took me to Texas to a friend of hers that had been married a long time and couldn't have children. And so she started the adoption proceedings. Before that 6-month waiting period to adoption, my mother came and got me and took me to Louisiana, to Monroe. This time, her brother agreed to take me. And he was 35 years old, had four kids, less than 6 months, would you believe? Now, this has to sound like I'm just writing a story here, making up a story. But listen, 6 months, he died of a heart attack at 35. So she came back again from California, but this time there just wasn't anybody. So she have a friend called the Louisiana Welfare Office to have them take me, and they said, well, they can't unless she signs a release so that can be placed for adoption, of course. For some reason, she wouldn't. And so she had this friend drive us to the office, told me to go up and knock on the door. And I did that and turned around. The car was driving off. I was about 4 years old then, and I didn't see her again until I found her after a three-year search when I was 25.
Wow.
So then I moved around a couple of foster homes, and then I graduated from high school at 17, worked my way through college, got married my senior year. And then about 8 or 9 years down the road, my wife was murdered by a drug addict.
Your wife was murdered.
I had, now all this time since I was fairly young, I was already filled with anger and rage,
yeah,
and
no
hostility
kidding.
And depression and all of these things. That of course had a lot to do with my relationships, my sudden explosion of anger and so forth. But in any case, my first in-laws, when my wife and I were thinking about getting married, they had me investigated and discovered that I was an orphan. And therefore, I didn't know who my real parents were. Therefore, I was trash, and she couldn't marry me. So, but we married, and they didn't come to the wedding, and things went on. And so, a number of years later, my grandson turned 15, got his driver's permit, got a car for his birthday, got on the freeway, and was killed the first time he got on the freeway.
My goodness.
Now, there was a few other factors in addition to all of the hate and anger and depression I was suffering and the fighting with in-laws and unhappy with everything in general, and the fact that I was on medicine. And as so many doctors today, a lot of them do not know the side effects of all the prescriptions they give. I was taking a couple, and these two prescriptions, well, after I attempted suicide, and I was in a coma about 6 days, and when I came out, I learned that when you're in a hospital for those different kinds of things, they have a tendency to examine your prescriptions,
mm-hmm.
The hospitals do.
Right.
And they found out I was taking two pills, prescriptions that were actually uppers and downers. Well, that was as much a cause of my attempted suicide as I think anything else.
How did you attempt to kill yourself? Was it with pills or?
I took an overdose of one of the prescription pills.
Okay.
But as it turns out now, looking back in hindsight, I don't know if I would have done that if it hadn't been for those pills I was taking in combination with all the stress and anger and depression I was suffering.
Mm.
But so anyway, then I changed jobs and careers, and then I met my wife, current wife. We've been married like 37 years now, and we married, and her mother, my mother-in-law, she fought me. It's ironic that I have been rejected in every situation in my life, practically all the way up until just not too many years ago, and it
now,
seems strange.
Now tell me about your perception of God at this point, or growing up.
Well,
because
I think that he was not it was like I believed that there was a God, but I don't know how much I believed that he cared for me because of all the things I kept going through.
I had that battle,
and yeah, God, I believe you're there. I don't understand what you keep doing to me and why you keep letting these things happen over and over and over. So I tried to go to church, and maybe I'd go for 6 weeks or whatever and try to take the kids home. And this was the thing I was going through, you know, up and down for, you know, 20, 25 years, and not really praying, not really reading the Bible, not doing, you know, much of anything except looking to God from time to time.
Understandably, you were angry.
So after I was married a while to my second wife, I'm still experiencing this. Even after the last things that happened, I was still experiencing some of that depression and things, but I started to think more and more and more about answers to get rid of the depression, to turn my life around. Now, I'm now 52 years old, and I'm still experiencing, you know, all of those emotions and anger and so forth. And then that's when I guess I started maybe feeling things subconsciously in my mind from God, I believe, and friends trying to encourage me to find a church. So we started looking and visiting some churches, and I found one that for some reason I liked it. And so
well, that's good.
And we still go to that church. And so we went to church, and Would you believe that, to me, it is not a coincidence. I don't believe in coincidences anymore. The very first sermon was, if you're unhappy and angry and suffering from depression and you've had a lot of problems and you feel like, you know, the world has just treated you so badly, then your answer is you have got to learn forgiveness, and you've got to forgive everybody that has harmed you in the past that's caused your anger and everything, and then quoting the Bible. And I said, right there, you know, I believe that God was really reaching out to me at that point and teaching me something, because I started trying to form that habit, to make a list of all of these things that happened and the people and start trying to forgive them. And I met with a lot of reluctance from me. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty hard for you in the very beginning, if the way I grew up, to turn around and say, okay, I can forgive you.
Right.
You can understand that. But I made sincere efforts. But and then there was these other people that friends would say, hey, just make this list and then pray to God, forgive those people, and you're going to be happy. No, it took me about 3 years, and I worked at it nearly every day, and I started to make some progress, and I started to feel some happiness. And it's like you take two steps forward and one back,
sure,
you know, because you kind of slide.
It's
slide
a process.
Back. But as I started to feel happiness that I never felt like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was kind of like, that was strong motivation and to help me then to start doing better. And so toward the end of the third year, I now, you know, really believed God, enjoyed God, and wanted to be in church and go into every function. And I was really turning my life around. And so then I started experiencing, I guess, the most happiness I'd ever had in my entire life.
Praise
God. I started about a 10-year stretch there that, I mean, everything just turned around. I was so happy. It was just unimaginable.
Well, when you get the peace and the joy of God in your life, I mean, things change. I mean, that's what Jesus does. And, you know, he commands us as believers to forgive even our enemies. And maybe not so much for our enemy's sake, but it's for our own sake, for our own healing. And I guess you've experienced that.
It was just so great. It was even a period of learning how to accept that happiness.
Right.
It's like, you know, I always felt like, well, I don't deserve anything. Mm-hmm. I didn't deserve happiness. I didn't deserve good things to happen. I didn't deserve anything. And I felt guilty for everything that happened in my life up to that point. And I don't know why. You know, partly because of the way I was raised, and the punishment and everything, they always made you feel like you did something wrong. Everything you did was wrong, and you caused this, you brought this on you. So that was a battle I had to fight through for quite some time.
Right.
And even today, there's times when I will instinctively think, well, it's my fault, you know. And then I sit down and realize, no, it's really nobody's fault.
And so the
point being that after about 10 years of the most happiness that I'd ever had, and I'm quick to point out to people that, look, I'm saying I had the most happiness I've ever had for that 10 years, but I am not saying that I didn't have any problems anymore. Oh, sure, we continue to have problems that everybody else was having.
Sure.
It's just that they weren't affecting me emotionally and mentally the same way. It was just, you deal with it,
right,
and you go on.
Right. Friends, we are speaking with Jerry Smith. He is our special guest today. He is the author of Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? A very interesting biography about this man and all the trauma he went through, ultimately to find God and to improve his life. And he experienced several miracles and divine interventions along the way. I'm Daniel Fazina, and this is the Divine Intervention Radio Show. So, Jerry, I want to ask you, after all of this, you found out that you did have something wrong with you physically. Tell us about what happened there.
Okay, I don't know how quick it came on, so I'm saying probably by the time that we discovered spots on my lungs, which was at age 64 in 2004, it was just time. I didn't notice that I had a problem.
Okay.
I had been running 4 miles a day, 5 days a week for 20 years. But suddenly the last year started to feel like getting to the end of that 4 miles was getting a little harder. Well, I guess, the maleness of me, that's just because I'm getting older. So I didn't really look into it, but the point came when they started bugging me to have my annual physical that I hadn't had in 3 or 4 years. I do that. Chest x-ray says you've got spots on your lungs.
Mm-hmm.
But after going through all the tests, and I mean, just one after another, including even going to the hospital and having a lung biopsy, We meet with the doctor on a Friday afternoon. My wife's with me, and he sits down and says, Miss Smith, I guess all I can do is give you the worst diagnosis I could give any patient.
Oh, boy.
And he shuts up.
Okay. Not a good intro there.
He says, well, you have a disease, a lung disease, that the name is pulmonary fibrosis. We've known about this disease for about 25 years. We just don't know what causes it, and we don't know how to treat it.
Wow.
And so after he gives me a little more insight and everything, then he says, look, my best estimate is that you probably have about 6 months to 2 years to live.
What are you
and
doing
I said, okay, well, there's no medicine or anything, and there's no treatment. I just kept pushing, as anybody would do. And I guess it was maybe irritation. And he says, look, you have a death sentence, and there is no hope. You just go home and come back in 6 months for another breathing test. We will do this every 6 months the rest of your life.
Is
this going to help me? No. Well, then why should I do it? He said, so that I can better estimate how much time you have left to live.
Wow, Jerry, I have to stop you right there and ask you, I mean, how do you handle a diagnosis like that? I've been faced with a similar type of situation, but, I mean, what do you think and what do you do and what do you say when the doctors are giving you literally no hope?
Well, all of a sudden, your heart, you can't sink any lower. I was almost speechless, and I'm not a speechless person.
I can tell.
I was just speechless. My wife was speechless, and we couldn't hardly talk. I said, well, you say go home, and it's a Friday afternoon, and to me, that is the worst time of the week, if there is a worst time, to get bad news, because I guess maybe the way my life had been up to that point, when I was suffering depression all the time, my best times were during the week when I would just work myself silly so that my mind could not think. You know,
okay.
It worked. But on Saturday and Sunday, I didn't work. Friday evenings and the weekends were always the quietest. So to get a death sentence on a Friday evening, you know. So I said, well, you say go home. Well, what am I going to do for the next 6 months? Well, whatever you've been doing in the past, continue doing that.
Okay.
You know, so we just go home, and I experience every emotion swings up and down and bad. And finally, after a few minutes, I'm not in my mind. I mean, out loud, I scream to God, God, why did you allow this to happen to me? God, haven't I had more than my fair share? Haven't you given me more, you know, than my share? Went back over my. It's kind of like they say, at the time of nearing a death or something, your life flashes in front of your eyes.
Right.
Well, I've heard that, and maybe this was a type of that. In the fact that I immediately started thinking, like I started the show with my grandmother, my mother, me, and all the way up through the present. I thought about each step of the way, and now I look back and I believe this was God's purpose, and I blame God step by step by step in my, you know, not out loud, that God, just like say, God, here's another one, God, here's another one.
Right.
And I was raging, and I went through that time, I don't know how much time it took, in other words, I went through my whole story, but when I finished and I was back to that time, all of a sudden I was as calm, there was no anger in my mind, I wasn't really thinking about anything, I was just peaceful and calm. This was such a new experience to me that I didn't know how to explain it. And I sat there calm, like, well, you know, like, for example, would you go watch TV or go to bed or something? I'm just calm. But what it was, I think God was putting in my mind, because at that point, the thought came to me, for example, I said, well, in reviewing my story, I said, Jerry, you've never been a quitter. You've never quit. Are you going to quit now? I said, okay, let's see. Now, what am I going to do? And I was doing it very calmly and rationally. And I said, well, there's one thing we can all do, and that's get on the internet and just look for answers and search for, you know. And so that's what I did. So I spent the next 2 weeks Googling every kind of combinations in reference to pulmonary fibrosis in terms of research, treatments, cures, you name it. Doctors and the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation of Europe, everything.
Well, I want to stop you right there. We want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I'd like to hear about how you actually Googled yourself to a cure and all the divine interventions that happened along the way.
Okay.
Again, we're speaking with Jerry Smith. His book is called Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? I'm Daniel Fazina, and you're listening to Divine Intervention Radio. So keep it right here. We're going to hear the rest of this amazing story right after the break. Stay with us on Divine Intervention. Hey, this is Daniel Fazina of Divine Intervention Radio. The Bible contains some incredible stories of miracles and divine interventions. Jesus calmed a raging storm, healed paralytics, and even raised the dead. But are these types of events still happening today? The answer to this question, as you will see from reading my books, Divine Intervention, Amazing True Stories of God's Miracles Today, Volumes 1 and 2, is an emphatic yes. Contained within each book is a collection of amazing true stories that attest to this fact. You will read the astonishing firsthand accounts of people who have been healed of paralysis, terminal cancer, and AIDS through prayer. You will see the love of God powerfully transform the life of an Islamic terrorist. You will witness the liberation of the demon-possessed, the resurrection of the dead, and much more. Prepare to be awed and inspired as you experience divine intervention. More information about Divine Intervention, Amazing True Stories of God's Miracles Today, Volumes 1 and 2, can be found at DivineInterventionRadio.com or by calling 866-381-BOOK. That's 866-381-2665.
But why, oh why? Wide awake in the middle of your nightmare. You saw it coming, but it hit you out of nowhere. And there's always scars when you fall that far. We lose our way, we get back up again. It's never too late to get back up again. And one day, you won't shine again. You may be knocked down, but not out forever. We lose our way, we get back up again. So get up, you won't shine again. It's never too late.
Welcome back to Divine Intervention. I'm your host, Daniel Fazina, and this is the interview show that features intriguing people who've experienced the hand of God in amazing ways. Our special guest this hour is Jerry Smith, and he is the author of Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear, which is a very interesting autobiography about his life story of being born the product of a rape to a woman who was handicapped, going through his life and being abandoned, and also later in life coming down with pulmonary fibrosis and the doctor's not giving him any hope. But we're going to hear the good news, the end of the story. Welcome back, Jerry.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So, okay, you got this diagnosis and you kind of vented to God and you felt peaceful about that. And then you were led to try and Google the answers to your question because no doctor in America was giving you any hope, right?
Exactly. They said there wasn't anything they could do because they didn't know what to do.
Okay. So what did you end up doing?
Well, that I believe that is the first instance that I can recall in my life that God actually just got into my mind, affected me. I think he put me through the story, and then he brought the calm and peace over me so I could think rationally.
Mm.
So I'm thinking, okay, I'll get on there and Google, and what do I actually look for other than using, you know, pulmonary fibrosis and doctors and cures and treatments and research and et cetera. So those came to me step by step. But the very first thing I did was, I thought common sense was, let's contact the Pulmonary Fibrosis Foundation of Europe.
Okay.
I mean, who else would have more better information? So I get on there, and about all that is pulmonary fibrosis is an incurable lung disease. There's no medicine or treatment, and the average lifespan worldwide is 7 years. That was it.
Seven years.
That's not too encouraging. So
okay.
So then I started Googling for doctors, for research, for treatments. Patients that have been cured, doctors that have cured pulmonary fibrosis patients, and everything I struck out.
Okay.
Now, I did this for about 2 weeks because I wasn't doing 8 hours a day. You know?
Right, right.
But I was spending a lot of time, though. So finally, I feel like that. The thing, too, that's applied throughout different parts of my life, like the 3-year search for my mother. After a few days, you get discouraged, and at least I got discouraged, and said, "Well, that's it," you know, and I might as well give up. But the next day, I'm all ready to fight again. So I went like that for about 2 weeks. So now I finish what I think is all I can think of words to Google, and it just I'm at my wit's end, so to speak, and I'm calm, and I'm saying, "Well, I guess that." I said, "Well, God, I guess that's it. I don't know anything else to Google."
Okay.
And in just a few seconds, this thought popped in my mind. It's like I'm Googling a doctor that has his own research lab, laboratory. Well, I look back now, it was God.
Sure. He's putting these ideas.
And so I did that. And after about 30, 40 minutes, I pull up this particular doctor in Germany that, number one, he's had a laboratory for 25 years. He started it 25 years ago with his own money and everything because he was so concerned about the AIDS outbreak. And he's done extensive cancer research for 25 years. And he also spoke broken English so I could talk to him. And I look back now and I see how it was important that I actually talk to him. And I'll show you why I think that. Because I contact him by email, of course, and I'm setting a time to know where, you know, how this is going to work.
Right.
And so a couple days later, I'm able to have him on the phone. He's speaking broken English, but we can understand each other. So I'm saying, great, Dr. Keefe. I said, do you know anything about pulmonary fibrosis? And he says, no, I don't know anything except I know it's incurable.
Mm.
Strike one. I said, well, have you ever treated anybody with symptoms similar to pulmonary fibrosis along the line of all these cancers? Maybe there's some correlation between it. No, I don't think so.
Hmm.
Right, too. Now, I was feeling optimistic, you know,
before.
And so now I said, oh, thorough cancer research is of all kinds, and you've been having a lot of success. That's correct. Well, with that research, could it kind of piggyback and, you know, overlap my pulmonary fibrosis that you could maybe find something? He said, I don't think so.
Hmm.
I mean, just like that. And all of a sudden, now my heart goes all the way to the floor again. I'm through. That's strike three, you're out. Three strikes, you're gone. And so now I'm getting very down again. And all this time I'm thinking, and it seems like I've been thinking for a long, long time, but maybe it was 15, 20, 25 seconds, I don't know. But this doctor's been quiet that whole time. That mm-hmm. I'm thinking, and what am I going to do? And suddenly, without me asking him, he just starts talking. Daniel, I believe that he heard the despair in my voice.
Sure.
And the mood and everything. And I've struck out and everything. Because he said, I tell you what, if you're willing to send me 20 cc's of your blood, I'd be willing to analyze it. And if I can find a culprit, he called it, I would be willing to research it as long as it takes to see if there's any way I can come up with something to make a serum that would help you. He said, now, let me say, I'm not saying there's any way I could possibly cure you, but maybe, I think maybe I could improve the quality of your life.
Okay.
Now, if that's not a God thing, you tell me what it is. The next thing I think kind of blow your mind is, so you think is, well, all I got to do is just run to a doctor, draw 20 cc's of blood, and send it to Germany, and hey, I'm home free.
Now, it was not that simple, though, because even the American doctors were not even open to this, were they?
Eight doctors turned me down. Eight doctors, because every one of them said, why do you want your blood drawn and given back to you? We don't do that. Why? You explain the story. And then most of the responses were, well, that's outside the AMA box, the American Medical Association box.
Oh, wow.
And I've learned in my research later, less than 20% of doctors in America today belong to the AMA.
Why do you think that is?
I think they don't want the dictatorial demands being made by the AMA more and more and more.
Well, amen to that.
I've affected them in different ways.
I'm glad they are taking a stand because.
I really believe they are more and more.
Well, it's good. They should have freedom to be able to experiment and try to treat people and help them.
Exactly. But and then the other one was, you don't want to waste your. That's a waste of your time and money. I said, well, number one, they said I could have as little as 6 months. So how much time do you think I should save?
And how much money?
Should I save my money to take it with me? Because I'm being sarcastic now. Because I'm a little irritated. But my favorite excuse of all is, Daniel, that's voodoo medicine.
Voodoo medicine? Just to analyze
voodoo
your blood?
Voodoo medicine.
They just want to analyze your blood, right?
Yeah, that's voodoo medicine. You don't want to mess with that. I said, what do you suggest I do? Nobody wants to do anything for me over here. Everybody tells me just to go home and wait. Well, I know what's probably going to happen if I go home and wait. Now, let me just quickly say that I have referred about, I've talked to over 300 people in almost 3 years now that have called me, without me calling them, that's heard about my cure. And half a dozen of them over the course of a year or so, including the very first one, which was this Army veteran from Naples, Florida, that I was able to convince to go. He's the very first one.
Go where?
His lung capacity was at 50% when he contacted me. Excuse me, COPD.
So where did you send him? You sent him to Germany?
I convinced him to go to Germany. He was down to 50%. He was going to the VA hospital. He was, because of lung disease, he believes.
Before we tell that story, tell us what happened with you.
Okay. So, anyway, so I finally got the blood to him. Now, he spends about 3 weeks, and he emails me and says, I have found a fungus in your blood. He said, did you grow up in the country predominantly where it was very heavily wooded? And I said, yes. And he said, well, that really agrees with my theory here is that this fungus is related to the spores of the tree family, spores that trees emit through the seasonal changes. You see them floating in the air and everything. It entered your body through your gums and attacked your autoimmune system. And after a number of years, after it breaks down the autoimmune system, your last line of defense, then it attacks your lungs. And so he said he was going to research that now. So he spent about 3 months, and he came up with a serum, and then he contacted me and said, send me 200 cc's of more of your blood. I'm going to mix them with the serum. Then I'm going to process that through the ozone oxidation machine, which uses 100% pure oxygen. There are no drugs, therefore no side effects in the ozone oxidation.
Well, I know that oxygen promotes healing in the body. When you supersaturate your blood with oxygen,
it
helps your immune system. So that's ingenious. That's great.
Well, you know, I was feeling maybe a little bit good, and so I was kidding him on the phone, and he didn't realize it at first. And I said, okay, all medicines have side effects, doctor. What I want to know, Dr. Keefe, is what will be the side effects of my using this ozone oxidation now? And he had this, no, it was when I was over there, that's right. And he had this funny expression on his face, and then he caught on and kind of grinned and says, the only side effect that I know of is if you don't get enough of it.
Yeah, if you don't get enough of it, you die.
You die if you don't get enough oxygen. You know. And so anyway, so we went over there to pick up the first batch. It was an 8-month batch. My lung capacity had been dropping, and it was down to 63%, by the way. That's what it is today.
63%, okay.
And so I met him because I wanted to meet him. I wanted to see the lab. I wanted to see if everything was on the up and up and what it looked like and so forth. So we got the medicine and came back over here, and I was in pretty rough condition by then. I could hardly walk. And so we made a very fast trip, no more time than it actually took to get there, get the medicine, get home.
Okay.
And I took it for the 8 months, and I was still taking my PFT every 6 months.
And by
the time I finished it, I went back for my PFT, and the doctor here says, in Dallas says, well, your lung capacity quit dropping. That's a good sign. Now, he doesn't know about Germany. To this day, he still doesn't know, because I've been attacked by doctors since I've been cured, criticized and called liar and different things.
So, Jerry, what exactly happened? Your lung capacity was dropping?
It was dropping, and it dropped to like 63%, and that's why he figured that if it kept dropping like that, then I could be gone in 6 months. To validate that, and what gets me is how these doctors can listen to my story and then tell me I'm either lying or misdiagnosed. And I said, well, when I went, the doctor had me go in the hospital for a lung biopsy. They then, after the results of that biopsy, they sent that biopsy to the Mayo Clinic's lab in Phoenix, Arizona, which does like 10,000 laboratory analyses a year. They confirmed the pulmonary fibrosis and the rate of decline.
Wow. So after you started taking the serum, the lung capacity stopped dropping?
Stopped.
Okay.
It just leveled off and didn't go down, didn't go up. It just leveled during that 8 months. So I sent that report, another 20 cc's, to Germany.
Okay.
My doctor, after he analyzes the blood again, he emails me and he's excited. He said, Jerry, now I'm going to make a second 8-month batch. I'm going to tweak it and make it stronger. And now these are his exact words. When you finish this second batch, you will be cured.
Wow.
8 months later, I was cured.
I went Hallelujah.
To the doctor here, and my lung capacity even increased from 63 to 70%.
That's great. This is Daniel Fazina. You're listening to Divine Intervention, and we are speaking with Jerry Smith, who's sharing his amazing story of perseverance in the face of a really bad diagnosis. But he did not give up, and God directed him to someone who was able to help. Just an amazing story. So, Jerry, after you got these words, you will be cured, and you took the lung capacity test and the serum and you were cured, I mean, how did you feel? What was your what was going through your mind
I'm
at that
ecstatic.
Point?
I'll just give you a real good example of that. I failed to mention that my color, skin tone had gotten a little bit dark, a little cloudy dark, and my walking was very bad, and I couldn't exert and bend over. Mm-hmm. Well, during that second 8 months, I started to get better. My skin tone lined up. People in my church would say, Jerry, what's going on with you? These kind of things. But anyway, then at the end of that 8 month batch, the doctor here in Dallas,
right.
And he did the test, and he said, Jerry says, I don't know what's going on, but he says, you're in remission. He said, that's not, just not possible. And I said, well, how about being that I'm cured? And he said, oh, no, that's impossible. I said, but you said being in remission was impossible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's more likely than being cured. But see,
they're both impossible, but one's more likely than the other?
Yeah, because remission, I guess, you know, you could slip back or something. So then, now we're feeling good. My wife now, I'm at, why wouldn't I? So we were just pushing him because I've never liked his bedside manner.
Mm.
By the way, I still go to him today. I've had 14 PFT tests. That's every 6 months.
What is a PFT test
that
for anyone who doesn't know?
That is a pulmonary function test. It's breathing into a computer in a glass booth.
Okay.
It takes about 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on which section you're doing. And it's very strenuous in the, breathing into that computer. Measuring your lung capacity and your lung diffusion rate, which is the rate of oxygen getting into the blood so it can go to every part of your body. Because
mm-hmm.
if your muscles don't have it, if any part of your body doesn't have that oxygen in it, it doesn't work.
Right.
And so we kept pushing him. I said, well, now, okay, then how do you explain this, doctor?
You
know, I just kept pushing him, and then finally, this doctor sat in his chair. He looks to the ceiling. He lifts his hand up kind of toward the ceiling and says, well, I guess it's just one of those God things. And we said, hey, we believe you're exactly right.
Wow. Unbelievable. I love that. You know, because, you know, we feature a lot of different miracle testimonies on this show. And sometimes, you know, God uses miracles, just he intervenes directly. Sometimes he guides people and he uses doctors and medicine. And in your case, I think he intervened and directed you to someone who could actually help.
Uh-huh.
And I think that we need to understand that we need to persist and not give up for our miracle. However it's going to happen, you know, we need to have faith and push forward. Because let's face it, the doctors are only human. They don't know everything. They may be thinking we're facing an impossible situation, but praise God, we serve the God of the impossible. And he's
exactly.
given us...
And, you know, the rest of my life to this point has showed me what God has had to do with my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
As I've become so much educated, more educated about God, and the fact that within 2 weeks of... Well, let me say that I sent that report in another 20 cc's of blood to Germany.
Okay.
The doctor analyzes it and reads the report and everything, and he emails back and says, Jerry, all traces and signs of it is gone from your blood. You are cured. You're the first known person in the world known to have been cured of pulmonary fibrosis.
Awesome.
Okay, so, you know, that's this Army veteran that's heard about the cure. Well, since then, I've had probably over 300. A little bit down the road, a little bit, people started saying, well, listen, have you that we're calling about help?
Mm.
Have you written a book? We need to know there's hope out there.
That's right.
And so then that comes around, and there's much more time than we would ever have today. How God forced me to write that book.
Now, I don't know
how that sounds, but
no, I understand.
I can give you one little short, make it a little short story.
Before we do that, I just want to remind everyone the name of your book is called "Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear?" And you chronicle this amazing story in that. Now, you originally didn't want to write the book, but you eventually did. So how did God nudge you into doing that?
I didn't want to write a book because the way I grew up, I don't attempt anything I don't think beforehand that I can do because I don't want to fail and be embarrassed. I grew up being embarrassed all the time. So I wouldn't write it because I said there's not enough to write to make up a book. I don't know how to write it. I'm not going to do it. And then God, this noise in your mind, similar to hearing an old favorite song of yours that you loved, and you love hearing it a time or two or three. But after a while, and when it doesn't happen to go away, now you're in it for the 10th, 20th, 30th, 40th, 50th time, you're tired of it.
Hmm.
And now you're struggling to get rid of it out of your mind, but it won't go away.
So this is God speaking to you.
That's what happened with God. It started that book, I mean, day after day after day, and I promise you, I fought it for about almost 2 months,
mm-hmm.
and I can't hardly work. I can't concentrate. I'm sick to death of it, this noise. And so finally, I'm thinking one day, and I said, you know, I'm a reasonably intelligent guy, I can beat God. And I promise you, Daniel, that's exactly what I said to myself. I can beat God in this because I've done a lot of research. Number one, less than 3% of manuscripts in this country are published. That's what was on the internet for the year 2007.
Mm-hmm.
I said, so what I'll do is I'll sit down and I'll write about two or three or maybe four pages of just my grandmother died, my mother was born deaf, mute, just what I said a while ago, just up to going into foster care, and that's it. I'll go on the internet, I'll find a publisher. I'll send it off. I'll either be rejected or I won't ever hear back from them. And then God's got to leave me alone because I made the effort. I did.
That's see? Right.
And that's how I want to beat him. And so I'll go on there and I only get one publisher. I only make a list of just one. I type about three pages. That's not enough for a book. Granted, right? And so I send this in, and in about 2 or 3 days, this noise is gone. God has completely left my mind on that.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden, first thing I know, it's about 7 weeks later. I have forgotten about sending these three pages. I haven't done, I mean, it's totally out of my mind.
Just three pages, was it just like a synopsis?
It was just a short 3 pages, yeah, just from my grandma and mother being born deaf mutant, right up to where I went into the foster care, and that was it.
Okay.
That's all I sent them.
So nothing about your pulmonary fibrosis?
Oh, no, I didn't, nothing. No, I didn't go anywhere at all, just 3 or 4 pages typed, that's all.
All right.
And so 7 weeks later, I'm not thinking about anything. God hasn't come back to my mind about the book. And so I won this thing.
Yeah, good luck
but
with that.
7 weeks later, one afternoon, you get stuff when you're not thinking about it, you know.
Yeah.
So I get a FedEx package. So, well, what's this? You know, and I open it. Now, let me say this. I didn't tell my wife a thing about it. She didn't know anything at all because why should I tell my wife I plan to fail at something?
Okay.
Just, you know, she don't need to ever know. So I got this FedEx package. I open it. And his letter starts off, says, in capital letters, wow. We love your story. We want to publish it, your book, and we've enclosed the contract.
Wow.
And I said, oh, God. And then a panic hit.
Yeah, you really got to do it.
My insides just balled up. And I mean, I just don't know how to explain it. Like my nerves. I said, oh, I can't, what am I going to do here? Should I call them and apologize for taking up their time? Or just don't respond and they'll forget it anyway? And so a few days, what am I going to do? And that's all I could think about is, what am I going to do? Well, wives, you know, wives. 3 or 4 days later, she finds it, goes in the closet or something, finds, well, what is this? And so she goes into all of it. But meantime, that noise is back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just as bad as ever. And it goes on for almost a week. Then it comes up Sunday. I'm sitting in church listening to our minister. I'm looking at his face. I'm looking at his mouth moving, and I'm not understanding any of the words. It's the noise. It's that bad. I've just said, that's it? I said, sitting right in the pew there to myself, I said, look, God, I know it's you, and I give up. I give in. I'll try to write this.
Okay. Fair enough deal,
and Sunday
I would
morning,
say.
And the sound was, and the noise was gone in a short time.
Okay.
Monday morning, I got up, sat down at the computer, started typing on Office Word, and I typed some every day until the book was finished about 4 months later.
Mm. And that book came to be the book called Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear, which is very aptly named considering your amazing story of, you know, all that you went through.
Danny, what's so funny?
What?
I said that question to myself many, 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 many times in my life. But when I got ready to submit that manuscript, the final one for them to publish, I didn't have a title. I couldn't think of a title. They said, send us 2 titles, first and second choices, 30 if you have it, because we copyright, as you know, and it's around the world. It could take up to 3 months. So give us 2 or 3 choices. And I couldn't, and my manuscript went off. I still didn't have one. And now they're bugging me, publisher. And so, and Zig Ziglar, every Sunday morning, was our Bible teacher. And every Sunday morning before class, he said, you got a title yet? He says, you know, that's very important, the title, blah, 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 blah. And so the Monday morning, my manuscript is gone, and I'm laying on this table with this back thing I'm doing at the back clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm laying there, and I'm saying, and now I'm not talking to God. No, I'm just doing one of those things that so many of us do, a generic expression. I wasn't saying God up there in heaven. What am I going to do? It's just an expression. God, what am I going to do about a title? And it was about 10 or 15 seconds, and I saw this line in my mind, does God give us more than we can bear? And I jumped on it instantly and says, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I'm so, and you know, and I knew for a few minutes, I knew that I had finally thought of it.
Well,
and somehow, a few minutes later, the thought hit my mind again, you didn't think of that. God just put it there.
That's right.
And so I sent it to the publisher. The publisher says, well, where's your second choice? I said, I ain't got one. Well, and now when I tell people later on, I said, you know, and then Daniel, you tell me how many places you've seen, and it ain't ever been, it's never been copyrighted. And so now I tell them, I said, I only sent one because God told me that's all I needed was one.
That's right. When you get it, you get it. And let me tell you, you may have been saying that expression, God, what am I going to do, off the cuff, but God is always listening, and he obviously answered you. That's great. Now, your book has gone on to become an Amazon bestseller. Again, Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? We're speaking with Jerry Smith, who's telling us about his riveting story. Now, Jerry, how has your life changed from this point forward? I mean, why did God want you to write this book?
Okay, as I started to say a while ago, I've learned now it's for every human being, even before they're born, and I believe how they live their life, or if they follow his direction, how they live the life is how he's planned it for them to be able to fulfill that purpose. And so I know it was important for me to have lived every facet of my life all the way, because he wanted me to get out there and tell that story every way I can to help people, whether they have childhood traumas or they have diseases or dysfunctional families or whatever the case might be, to show them that there's hope, and that by showing them that, hey, I overcame all that you can too, and I overcame it with faith and belief in God and his help, and you can too. And I know, as you and everyone, so many other people know, is how many people come up to you on a regular basis and say, oh, I'm so sorry for your loss, or so sorry for this, I know how you feel, whatever. No, they don't. Not unless they've experienced it. That's just a saying. And right. I'm saying that I have more credibility when I tell you, hey, I know what you're living. I lived it. Mm-hmm. And I overcame it. And because I overcame it, I believe you can too, if you believe in God and you turn to God and you ask God for his help. Mm-hmm. And so forth. And so in doing that, that's why the book, and then when I was trying to do something with the book and I couldn't sell a book, I couldn't do anything with it, then I was started hearing that, well, you really need to be, and then we went to fellowship, you have to become a public speaker and you have to do radio shows in order to help get that word out. And so then when I was told by Steve Harrison that you have to become a public speaker, and I'd never spoken in my life, I couldn't even get up in a little seminar deal, you know, mm-hmm. just for that minute it takes to get up and say, your name, where you, what you do for a living, where you're from. That made me so scared I couldn't remember those few words. I left there saying, I can never be a speaker, I can never do radio shows, I can never this, I can never that. But that all goes to prove one thing. If you accept God's purpose for your life, he will make all things possible. I'd never done before, I couldn't do it, and I was scared to absolute to death till I got up there, and then it was just God took over and talked through me.
That's awesome. And now a lot of people are coming to you for help and advice because they heard about you being the only person recorded that's been cured of pulmonary fibrosis. So what has that been like to be able to help other people who call you for advice?
Oh, it is so it's so amazing. I've had so many email me and call me. I start off helping them, giving them all the information, how to contact the doctor, and what they're going to experience, how they do it, what they'll need to know, what they need. And I spend an hour to an hour and a half on the phone. But another quick example, the Steve Harrison's Quantum Leap. In June, he met this young couple. He's a doctor from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and his wife, and he was the one with trying to write the book. And so anyway, we were talking about books. He said, let me ask about my books. Well, I want one. So they read it while we were in Philadelphia that 3 days. We became friends. Okay, then about 2 to 3 months ago, somewhere about the end of June, the 1st of July of 2011, one night I get a call from this couple. They're both on the phone. And they said, Jerry, this is Gina and Ellie. Do you remember? I said, well, certainly. He said, well, and it's the wife, Gina. She said, well, Jerry, we have God had both of us at that seminar, and that God had introduced me to you or me to you.
Mm-hmm.
God put you in front of me a year ago when I was totally well and healthy.
Amen.
That wasn't an accident. That was a God
that was
thing.
Totally your God thing. Jerry, I got to tell you, I love when God does that. I have to share with you a little bit of my own story. I shared with you briefly before, but I was very much interested in cancer and the alternative treatments and the drug industry, just because I thought it was fascinating. And I was reading everything about cancer for like 6 months. And it was 6 months later that I was diagnosed with cancer. And I had a huge, massive tumor in my chest the size of my heart.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and, you know, I went through a lot of different types of treatments, but it's just so amazing that I had started this exhaustive search and study on the subject before I even knew anything was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And then this diagnosis came into my life. And I really appreciated your story because when I went through treatments, I mean, I had to get some of my vitamins from Mexico to take them
mm-hmm.
because the FDA doesn't approve them or whatever, and they're just vitamins. They don't have any side effects.
Yeah.
But I had to get them, like I said, I had to get them in Mexico. They weren't available here. You know, so I went through a lot of different types of treatments, you know, and God used a number of different things to heal me. But I just, you know, your story resonated with me. So I want to thank you so much for taking the time to share with us your amazing story.
Well, it's my pleasure. I just wished I had more shows, more time, more places to be to get the word out. Because I'm telling you, it is just—it's all powerful. What God, if you just like obey Him, you accept His purpose and you obey Him and you make the effort. And there is hope, and you got to have your hope and faith and belief for the chance that you can be cured or improve your quality of life for what you have left.
Right. You definitely, you need hope. And, you know, with God, all things are possible, you know, and I'm just so thankful for your story. And, Jerry, if there's someone listening to the show right now who may not even believe in God, maybe they've had a really rough life similar to what you've had, what would you want to say to them?
I would want to say that they need to talk. They need to get in touch with God. They need to sit down and, you know, get in a quiet room somewhere or something, and they need to pray to God. And God, you know, if I don't know you, I want to know you, and I want to know what you have in store for me. I want to know what your purpose is in my life, that I know that you have a purpose, if you will reveal to me, go from here, and how I can serve you, Lord, and fulfill that purpose. And know, you know, that I can have hope and belief and trust, and that without that, you might as well just be dead anyway, Daniel.
Wow, that's powerful truth. But yeah, I mean, honestly, God, when we're in touch with Him and we invite Him into our life, He's what gives us our purpose, you know, and especially if we have gifts and talents, which we all do, that God gives us, when we use those gifts and talents to serve other people and to serve God, that's where we're going to find the most fulfillment in life and purpose.
Well, I try to tell them, I said, don't you believe that, you know, that God wants His own Father? We talk to our Father every day, and we ask our Father for guidance and help and with our problems and whatever we do. Well, God wants to hear from us just like we're His child, the same way.
Amen. Well, Jerry, we are out of time, but I want to thank you so much. Once again, Jerry Smith, the book is called Does God Give Us More Than We Can Bear? And I highly recommend you pick it up. And your website is jerrysmith.org, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, so you can get more information, get in contact with Jerry, have him speak at your organization, your church, or help out with any of the medical questions that he can help with in talking about his own experience. So once again, Jerry Smith, thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Daniel. Let's do it again sometime.
All right. Again, I'm Daniel Fazina, your host. And if you have any questions, you can email me at divineintervention@mail.com, divineintervention@mail.com. And, of course, all of our shows are archived. You can check us out online, divineinterventionradio.com, divineinterventionradio.com. God willing, we'll see you again next week for another exciting episode of Divine Intervention. Take care and God bless. Hey, this is Daniel Fazina. Thanks for listening to my show, Divine Intervention. I hope you have been inspired by the many miracle testimonies we have featured and that your faith has increased. More information about the show, free downloads, and podcasts can be found on the web at www.divineinterventionradio.com.